the more you create these roadblocks that don't make sense for business, the more people will navigate around them. Because what they're sure of is they'll lose their job if they don't make their numbers.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operations. My name is Sagi. I'm the CEO and founder of Tonkin, and today I have the pleasure of hosting Gabriel. Hey, Gabriel. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Sagi. It's a pleasure to join you and talk about, you know, my experiences with legal and legal transformation.
Well, there's a lot of things I want to go into, so I'm excited for this conversation. But maybe as a starting point, Gabriel is the Executive Vice President of Contracts, Compliance, and Commercial Services at Integrion, and you're executive in UnitedLex Corporation and HP. And so there's a lot of great career behind you and in front of you. But maybe give me and the audience a little bit of context of your career, what you're responsible for today, and kind of what got you here, and so we can start from there.
Absolutely. Okay, in terms of a legal career, I've kind of done almost the entire arc. I started in big law. I did a couple stints overseas, Madrid, Tokyo, which I think were very formative for me in terms of just cultural immersion and different ways of doing things. But when I left big law, I always loved business. So I wanted to go in-house. And I started working at Hewlett-Packard back when it was a smaller company. I started probably in one of the smallest regions of Hewlett-Packard, the non-subsidiary countries of Latin America, basically the Caribbean and Central America. And then moved my way up the company from there, you know, increasingly more senior roles. Toward the end, my last role was SVP, where I was responsible for both the printing and the PC divisions from a legal perspective, but I also ran legal strategy and operations that'll form the gist of some of the things we'll talk about today. When I left in-house, I had moved back to Miami, and I've always been fascinating of trying to transform legal services delivery, right? Legal is one of the last functions that in some ways still operates in kind of an antiquated model. And I've always thought that the time would come that it will be transformed. Now, I've been battling that fight for a long time now, but I actually think that we're on the cusp of a true transformational change.
So that's a great place to start. So let's start there. So I agree with you. And I think most people in the audience that either work at legal departments or with legal departments can resonate with that. Why now? Or what do you think is the difference in the timing?
So I think there's a number of drivers, but we, you know, almost any conversation has to start with Gen AI, right? Why? Because it's a technology that the speed of usage, the speed of which it's been developing, because I've been fascinated to when we started using it to where it is now, how rapid that development has been. And it's a technology that lends itself to language and documents, which a lot of legal output is language and documents, right? More and more people are using it. There's an entire generation entering the workforce that'll be Gen AI native, right? That's how they'll want to work. So I think in many respects, a fuse has been lit in terms of how legal services is going to be transformed. And it's really going to be the speed of it. I just tend to believe it'll be faster than other, say, IT transformations, just because of the speed of, you know, initial usage of people, the speed of which it's developing, right? So, you know, working at Hewlett-Packard, one of the advantages for me was I've seen transformation. A chunk of my career in the Valley, the Valley is all about disruption and can you disrupt the incumbent, right? The difference is those disruptions take a while, right? Just like, for example, the cloud, the economics of the cloud made too much sense that you knew that it was going to eventually win out. But for a while it was, oh my God, who would trust their data out in the cloud and everything had to be on-prem and all that. But you knew over time that it would just get there, right? Because the value proposition was too great. And the other thing that you learn about disruption is incumbents are usually not the disruptors, right? Think about it. I supported the printing division. And when we were going through digitization, right, it was all like, oh my God, this is going to be the greatest thing for printing. So many people are putting more things out in the cloud and people are going to be able to print so much more. And you're realizing like, well, but people are using their phones or people are using their computers. People aren't really printing anymore. And these are brilliant people, right? These were not dumb people, right? But you can convince yourself as an incumbent why disruption is not going to topple your business model, right? And I think that's entirely what's going to happen here is I think the disruption is going to need to come more from in-house leadership and from disruptors such as us in the alternative legal services space. We have really no option but to be a disruptor, right? I'm not protecting a $2 billion revenue stream, right? And I can't afford to be late to the party. I'm not big enough to catch up if I missed the industry transition. And so we've leaned heavily into it. We very much believe in it. And we're starting to see enough uptake by people, right? You talk to almost anybody in in-house legal department, is people are at least starting to use Gen AI, right? It is no longer about what is this, what are the risks, people are starting to use it, right? Are they using it yet at scale? Have they achieved massive transformation? No, not yet. It's still early, but they're starting to use it and they're starting to find use cases. And I think that'll just accelerate more and more as time goes by.
I think there's two really intriguing points that I think worth even continue double click on, because the example with the printers, people printing things, and how it's related to the cloud and the mobile is fascinating to me. So many people are talking about the first order of implications when they think about Gen AI and LLMs and so on, of like, how do you would do things that way, and now with this, you know, new technology, you will do it another way. But the real transformations happen, or the real disruption, to use your point, happens on the second order effect of some of those things. And, you know, you described kind of like how hard it is, you know, I think it's called like the innovator dilemma, right? Of like, you're in that place. The dilemma is that by definition, you can't say your child is ugly, right? You're like, no, like what we're doing has value. Sure, change is going to come. We're going to adapt. And here's the scenario where it's valuable and it's positive, and it's blocking you from zooming out and say, actually, maybe everything's going to change. Like, what is the second order? And the reason I like this, and kind of to segue into your point about the legal, the in-house lawyers and just law in general, I think everyone, or not everyone, but a lot of the conversation is still stuck on the first order of impact. And now, let's unpack that for a second. Like, how would you think through that?
So let's make sure that we understand by first order, what do you want to unpack? The fact that you have Gen AI, you have the large language models, you have, you know, you have the use cases that people are building on top of these models. And so the foundations are starting to exist to transform, right? But the real transformation will come when you take those foundations and you actually do work in a different way and do it in a way that completely transforms how that work has been delivered, right? So I think initially, a lot of attention to your point was also just put into, it's a little bit like the cloud and the fear of the cloud. It's like, oh my God, you know, is my data going to be compromised? What do we do about privacy and confidentiality and everything else? And the reality is most credible players think about that, right? This is the same way that cloud companies thought about that, because they knew nobody's more invested in their business model than they are. They know that if there was massive breaches of data for people putting things in the cloud, that their models would be destroyed. So nobody thinks more about security and how to provide, you know, comfort to people than people that are building those foundations in those environments. And I think we're starting to get to the place that people have started to make the transition where a year ago, everybody was kicking the tires and we're forming AI committees and we're trying to understand what's an appropriate use or not a use and who had control over the decision, to people are now starting to use. I'll give you another learning. I don't know if it's the right thing, but I'll give it to you anyway, right? Mm-hmm. I think as companies have started to understand that they have to use AI responsibly, right, they also have to be careful not to be so conservative that people are going to use it anyway. Right. I used to say this about procurement at HP. Right. And hopefully not too many people from HP are listening today, but it's been a while since I worked there. No, but it used to take us 6 months to onboard a client. I mean, a new vendor. Right. Yeah. And you say, listen, people operate in the real world. They get judged on a quarterly basis. there may be vendors that you need to onboard to change your quarter. You may need a new marketing campaign. You may need something. The more you create these roadblocks that don't make sense for business, the more people will navigate around them, right? Because what they're sure of is they'll lose their job if they don't make their numbers, right? They may be more willing to ask for forgiveness later on, maybe when they didn't quite follow the procurement policy. Yeah. And I think the same thing is happening now, right? Because even when you do read a lot of the surveys, a lot of people are experimenting with Gen AI outside of their corporate environments. And I think companies need to understand that. They need to create quickly kind of a safe place where people can actually use and test the AI. And I think that's starting to happen now more and more, right? And I'm going to unpack things in a little different way, the way I kind of think about AI a little bit and the use cases is, I think there is clearly, let's start with in-house legal departments. Clearly, in-house legal teams will want to figure out what are the right platforms and uses that augment the in-house lawyers to do more and to do more effectively, to create capacity for themselves, to be able to do the more complex work. But I also think, like in many instances of legal tech, that they have to be careful not to rush to license something that they don't yet quite understand what the use case is, how they're actually going to deploy it, if they have the skill sets to deploy it, if they can get a bunch of people to do this at scale, right? Because it's, you know in-house, you know, if you ever rolled out a CLM, you know, getting 50 lawyers to use it is a challenge. And so I do think that as in-house teams consume this, I tend to recommend a lot, you know, use third parties, do pilots, do a proof of concepts, figure out ways, maybe buy a tech-enabled service because you can always insource, right? You know, and that way you don't guess wrong, right? If things are moving fairly quickly, there are ways that you start testing and figuring out what is the right use case for your company, what really makes a difference. And I'd like to get out of the paradigm where everybody just automatically licenses. Because what I don't want to happen with AI is what happened particularly in early days of CLM. How many people have implemented CLM and you talk to them and it's a front-end workflow and it's a repository and that's it. And only so many people use it. And you run the same risk with the Gen AI application. Have you identified the right use cases? Have you really understood the technology? Have you tried the technology? Is it going to work? Can you do the change management? Can you scale it? All the things that you have to think about, right, with any legal tech. And so I believe that partnering may be a good initial way for people to start embracing Gen AI and figuring out what are the right use cases for them and what are the things that are really going to be most impactful for their in-house legal teams.
I agree. I think it's an interesting way to go about it. I also think it's an interesting comparison. So if we zoom out, you know, half a step and you think about that transformation, you kind of compare it to the cloud or even to the sort of like quote unquote digital transformation, right? I do think there's an interesting, my opinion, I'm wondering how you feel about that. There is a distinct difference between the digital transformation to what might be the sort of like AI transformation. A lot of it because we don't know what it's going to end up like, but the digital transformation was, as it's called, taking whatever we did before and put it in a digital form, right? A lot of the reason why Word and Excel and PowerPoint have maintained their like superiority, even on top of systems like a CLM that was trying to, you know, help with kind of modernizing the process, is because there wasn't enough of an improvement. It wasn't like a, you know, an order of magnitude better. It was the order of magnitude was that it's no longer handwritten. It's now in a digital form. Anything on top of it was useful, was valuable, but unless you have an acute pain in a certain area that is unique to you, just adding a CLM on top of the files was not that useful for many because the work was done in the Word document anyway. And, you know, and that was just adding something that is not, you know, it's not painful enough or it's not useful enough to kind of like justify the, like you said, the adoption of it. What's interesting to me, and I kind of want to move it to you, AI does have a more like closer to like the internet and the mobile, you know, sort of like transformation potential where they might change behavior as a whole, right? I really think your point about the printing is super interesting, is that if you focus on the printing industry of what you know, cloud and internet would open or close in the world of printing, but not considering the second wave effect of the mobile and the on-the-go and the screens, then you sort of like optimizing for just like the one step ahead and not two steps ahead. Do you think like it's really interesting, what is the org chart for a legal department gonna look like when this is fully absorbed? Like when everyone are using Gen AI internally, not only the lawyers, like what is the expectations gonna be like from the counterparties, from outside counsel, like from cost structures? There's so much like secondary effects that can happen, you know? And that's where the big question mark is.
It is. It's an excellent point. You bring me to, you know, like one of the biggest things I learned about transformation, right? And that is you have the most flexibility, the most creativity in transformation when you're early to it, before somebody asks you to transform. Because you would be amazed that if you think about it in a very forward-looking way, you can often even self-fund transformation, right? By hiring in the right places, by looking, for example, take even like basic uses of Gen AI, like, oh, it can do diligence better or something like that, a repapering exercise better, something like that, and say, the more work I can take away from outside counsel, right? That is a huge cost savings. Now, I don't immediately, if I'm doing transformation before I'm asked to, I don't immediately need to give the money back. I can repurpose the money to say, boy, if I had a few more lawyers who could do a bit more different things, I could even take more work from outside counsel and do it myself, right? All of those, like when we did this at HP, right? We were 1,200 people. It was a really big transformation. But essentially, we self-funded all of it. And that self-funding included a CLM, a matter management system, all the tools that you needed to run and actually understand what 1,200 people were doing. That was initially our big problem, is we had no idea really what 1,200 people were doing, and we needed the data to tell us what that is. But we insourced so much of that legal work because we started to realize like, oh, if we actually stopped giving stuff away to outside counsel and hired the people who could do the work internally themselves, and here's the reality of that, and could do it better because they understand the company, they understand the risk profile, they understand that, you know, all of that is
they have the context.
Right? Is germane to the in-house team. And I think even when we don't know yet everything that's going to happen with Gen AI, that's why to me it's like launch in terms of your thinking about it. How is this going to change? What are the steps you should be taking now? How do you self-fund some of this journey? Even like the way you described, like what does the organization look like? Is it all lawyers and paralegals and contracts people? No, probably not, right? It's going to have a mix because data is going to play a huge role in how you take advantage of Gen AI. And so the more forward thinking you are about that, the more freedom you have to design things in the way you think things are going. The more resistant or the more you wait for the change to happen to you, you know, we understand large companies, right? They're going to have a big Gen AI initiative and somebody's going to come down and say, boy, from what I'm reading about Gen AI, you should reduce the legal spend by 25%. And you'll be given a timeline and normally a headcount associated with that around how many people need to go. And if you haven't really transformed, what happens? The remaining people just get stuck with even more work than they had on their plate. So it is, when you think about where we're going and how you have to think about it, my biggest recommendation to people is be forward thinking about how this change is going to happen. And the more forward thinking you are, the more control you're actually going to have about the moves you need to make.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast.
And if you tie it back to the innovator dilemma, I think the most important piece there is that in many times that incumbent on, or sort of like that current state, has the false belief that they will be able to avert the change that is coming. And therefore, it's better to kind of optimize for what it is versus what might be. And I think if I take it to your point, it's like the transformation can happen to you, or you can drive it. And, you know, and if you get ahead of it, then you might you definitely has a good chance to come on top, but at the very least, you're going to be able to handle it on your terms.
That's right. Right. No, that's exactly right. And it'll reflect what you really think is the right thing to do for your legal function. It's a fascinating time to be in-house. Remembering from my days in-house, it's sort of like, look, the legal services delivery model is going to be reordered. It's still early days. What lands where, we don't all really know yet, but it's going to be reordered. And you're in the quarter, you know, if I can use a football analogy, you're almost like the quarterback. You can be the quarterback around how this future game is going to be played, but it's the point you just made, but you can't let it happen to you. You have to be the one that's actually calling the game, right?
Yeah, exactly. You have a game plan. Yeah. Doesn't mean it's going to work. As a quarterback, you need to adjust and read.
Yeah, be agile, right? Just, that's exactly right.
So maybe kind of as a final point on this, what is your prediction time-wise? You know, there's a lot of noise. This is happening tomorrow. This is far away. This obviously everyone are in the understanding that, like everything you said, you know, people are using ChatGPT in their personal life. Their expectations are different. New generations comes in. But where do you, like, there's listeners to this, hearing all of this, saying, oh, that's a great advice. What is the urgency here, in your opinion?
I think take advantage of the use cases that are available today that can make a difference. Like, I would focus on routine workloads. You know, we've been trying to kill the NDA off for what, 20 years, 25 years? Right? And I still can't tell you how many clients I get, hey, we need help with NDAs. And it's just, there are things like that, routine documents that AI can be really good at automating the review, the negotiation, start to help desks. Think about like the old static frequently asked questions that people would create. They'd put on an internet site somewhere. People would forget about it. They'd become dated or whatever. It's like, you know, have your business clients query the policy, get their own answers. Again, those are easy knowledge bases to build. They're available now. Automate workflows. Maybe there's basic agents that you can use to make things move better. All those things are possibility today. I would start with all of that today because they're available today. Now, I think the pace of innovation is also going to happen a little bit different depending on practice group, right? You know, we do a variety of service lines, and you see differences depending on what the practice group is. Like litigation, right? Litigation, the challenge with litigation is that it's an adversarial procedure and it involves a judge. So you do need to, you know, have a few parties agree on changing the game before you can jump into like, oh, look, discovery is all going away. It'll all be done automatic, you know, it'll all be automated or whatever. So that may take a little while longer, right? But there are use cases today, legal research, that's going to continue to accelerate and be done in a very different way. So to me, it's like there's a part of legal work that's ready now. It doesn't change at all, but there's a part of legal work that's ready now that we should embrace and start to change. And it'll get you ready, and it'll help you build the skills that you need as you move up the complexity stack on what the art of the possible is. But till it fully changes, you know, 3 years is my prediction. 5 may be the more accurate landing spot, but I think between 3 and 5, it'll be very different than the way you perform legal services today.
Yeah, that checks. I think that the cycle with new folks coming in, getting out of their junior positions into more kind of like prominent positions, that will make a big impact too.
No, I agree. And if you don't mind, I'm going to make one real quick point about junior positions, because I know that there's a lot of people that are fearful that the junior lawyer job will go away, that Gen AI will replace it. I think people, if they go too far in thinking that way, are making a mistake, right? If I was running a law firm or I was running an in-house legal department, I would want to be hiring people that are really familiar with the technology. Mm-hmm. They really have embraced the technology. They know how to use the technology and have it be incumbent on me to teach them the context, you know, how to review a contract, what's important, all those things. But you can't cut yourself off from the people who are going to be the most ready and willing to use the technology.
I could not agree more. They're bringing skills that you don't even know right now that you would need. And I think that was always the case. And I agree with you. It's very short-sighted to think that that whole class of people would not be necessary. It's complete. History proves the exact opposite every time.
Every time, right?
Every time.
I remember it was funny because one of the things we did at HP is we hired first-year lawyers. And I was at a Stanford meeting, and there was a general counsel that will not be named from a very prestigious company who said, "You're ruining their careers. If they don't start at a law firm, they won't succeed." And I'm like, we're 1,200 people legal department. We are literally like a law firm. We're almost like a captive law firm inside a company. And the reality is you always underestimate how fast young, ambitious people learn, right? We always want to spoon feed them. And oh boy, you know, you have to sit in a room and look at documents and e-discovery or do due diligence for a year. And no, people can learn very rapidly if you give them good good training and then experiences to do that. And that always taught me, like, no, young people, if they're ambitious and you have good training and good experiences, they develop at a much more rapid clip than you give them credit for.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, the cloud was, for example, was a more of a corporate transformation. But the mobile, for example, was, you know, consumer as well. I think AI is a consumer as well, which means the expectations of everyone else, like the entire society, is going to go through a transformation. I don't know how big or small, I don't know, but a transformation for sure. So those guys you're hiring, those, you know, guys you're hiring, they're going to be in their height of their career in like 5, 10, 15 years. Like, who knows, like, what's the expectations are going to be in 15 years outside of the department that you hire them for. By the way, regardless if it's legal, finance, HR, marketing, sales, like, it is all, you know, we're all part of this ecosystem and reacting to it. And some stuff are always kind of like for ourselves, the way we run things. And then a lot of it is how this intersect with the rest of the organization and outside of the organization. So I think it's really double down on your point, which I agree with, is completely short-sighted to think that whatever was true 20 years ago is going to be true in 20 years.
Absolutely. Or in two.
Yeah, or in two. Perfect. Well, maybe to finish on with, kind of back on a personal note, you know, I think that was a great advice of kind of how to think about AI, but maybe on a personal level, any advice you maybe like to ask, any advice you got early in your career that you feel like is good paying forward?
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm going to provide two, I'll be brief. One is going to be very much on the Gen AI theme. Some people get scared of change. I will tell you that change is an opportunity. My career was defined at HP by willing to take risk and change. Like, literally, it's going to be silly, and I don't mean, I love California, so it's not meant to be a critique on California. When HP bought Compaq, right? It was in Houston, and like everybody in California was like, "Oh no, I'm not moving to Texas," and it was, and it was like, "I'll move. It's a big promotion." And nice. My point is, when there's change, there's the opportunity for those who embrace change, and never forget that. And so, think about everything that's going on. Look at how you take advantage of change, and then the other advice that I would recommend anybody who works in an in-house environment is, it's incumbent on you to step out of just legal and learn the business. Learn the company, the competitive landscape, the risk profile, the products and services, the technology, all of it. It will make you so much better lawyer. And it will allow you to have really good conversations with your business clients when you understand what they do and what their challenges are. I mean, that's the other thing I recommend to anybody who goes in-house is learn the business.
I think both of them are perfect timing too, because even the second point, it's like the context is the king. When if Gen AI actually happens like we think it will, and LLMs and all that stuff, that what remains is the context and the nuances of the specific business culture, you know, priorities. Very, very impactful. Thank you so much, Gabriel, for this. This was really fun. If anyone wants to chat with you or, you know, nerd on those things, where can they find you?
On LinkedIn, Gabriel Buigas, at Integrion.com. I actually like this stuff too. I will gladly talk to anybody about it, honestly. So I don't mind. I'm super responsive. If people want to reach out to me, if they have questions, they want to know what we're doing at Integrion, what use cases we see, all those experiences, I'm more than happy to talk to them.
Awesome. Gabriel, thank you so much. That was great. Thank you for joining.
No, thank you for the invite. Have a great day.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned on today's episode at tonkin.com/mbopod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on the latest in business operations technology, head over to tonkin.com.